November 19th, 2004, 15 years later, something that'll always be mentioned when they mention Steven Jackson is the Malice in the Palace, but I want to take a look back because something, a football version of that somewhat happened, minus going in the stands, but we're, you know, last week, Myles Garrett, what some are calling a questionable late hit Mason Rudolph. Late in the game, game was already in hand. I guess Mason Rudolph took offense to it, tried to pull his helmet off, didn't work. Mm-hmm. Got his helmet pulled off. Then he tried to rush him like he was really going to do something to him. And then got bopped with the helmet.
Yeah. Ugh.
And, you know, it's Myles Garrett's, you know, life is probably changing right now. You know what I mean? Just from that incident. You know, if you could tell him anything or what he's thinking right now, take a what would it be?
Well, it's a different time. You know, when that happened with us, we couldn't come out and speak.
There was no social media yet.
No social media, not like that. And we couldn't control our own narrative. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think he has the outlets to say exactly what happened, to walk with people with the video that might not see the things mm-hmm. that he saw actually being on the field. A lot of, you know, I think we had to sit back and just take it, you know, with everything being on TV. These guys are thugs. These guys are rich babies. They shouldn't be in the NBA. I had never been in trouble with the law in my life before that brawl. I had never been in an NBA fight in the game before that brawl. So I think he should just stay quiet. But when he has his time to speak, say everything. Don't hold back.
He needs to come on here. He needs to come on All the Smoke and say everything.
Well, I mean, if he really want to get his story up, I think the way the platform we've created and the way all the players are respecting, I think this is the place for him.
Absolutely.
Because he know we're not going to judge him. And Absolutely. At the same time, when talking to us, we understand.
We've been
there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I can't tell him another show he could go on and talk right. to where people can relate to him like we can.
I feel you. So take me back to your journey getting to the Pacers?
Well, in 03, I won a championship with the Spurs. I was looking for my big contract after that. I hit some big, big, big shots. But as you know now, you can see now, the Spurs were favoring three guys, mm-hmm. Ginobili, Tony, and Tim Duncan. And Ginobili and Tony were up the same time I was up, you know, and I think they wanted to give them the big number contracts and lowball me. It was like 3 years. $9 million, and I felt insulted. You know, we wouldn't have had a championship without me. We wouldn't have made it out the Western Conference without me. And so I decided to go to Atlanta for 1 year and prove myself. And around that year, Mike Brown took a assistant head coach job in Indiana with Rick Carlisle. And during the course of that year at Atlanta, you know, I think I was having a great year. But the second half of the season, I was like sixth in scoring in the whole league. And Mike Brown came, called me up. We played him, and Rick pulled me to the side. He's like, "We know you didn't get your contract this summer. Keep a level head, finish the season healthy, and we're gonna bring you give you a contract next year." So, with knowing that helped me the rest of the season, because all I had to do was put up numbers. Right. Our team was shitty. We was trash. It was me, Bobby, Bob Sura, and Jason Terry.
That was it.
Yeah, and rest in peace, Jason Collier. We had Jason Collier as well. We was a small team. They had no plans of winning. Mm-hmm. Terry Stouts was our coach at the time. But I was just putting up numbers, and just the fact that they came and told me that I was going to get my deal that summer, mm-hmm. I knew the team was already good. They were one of the best teams in the East, and right. to know I was going to be a part of that was good. It was special.
So you end up getting your deal the following summer?
I ended up getting my six-year deal for 36, but it equaled out being 6 years, 42.
Okay, so now you're in Indiana with the team that had a bitter Eastern Conference exit in the finals to the Pistons. So you didn't really, coming in that situation, understand what kind of rivalry that was, did you?
Well, I really, the only rival I understood at that time was the Spurs and Lakers. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't the type of rivalry that Detroit and Indiana was. Mm-hmm. Like, this was some street shit. Mm-hmm. That's not real. This is some jail prison beef basketball, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And I walked into it, but I have respect, so much respect. Chauncey was like a big brother. Rip graduated in high school, 96 McDonald's All-America, so we were great, great friends. So walking into that, I didn't know that I was gonna have to pick a side like that to really. I knew I was gonna pick a side playing basketball, but to start a fight in a brawl, I didn't know I was gonna have to pick a side like that.
So here we are, the end of the game. You guys got the game in hand. You're up 15 points. To me, looking at the play, a hard foul maybe, maybe not. I mean, it's Ron. Obviously, Ben took offense to it. You know, looked like Ben wanted to bite Ron's head off.
Word.
They, you know, you guys did a good job of keeping them all separate. Ron gets hit with something. He charges up in the stands. At that moment, what made you charge?
Well, at that moment, my adrenaline, I was already in fight mode. If you look at it, you know, like I just said, me and Rip was cool. But at that moment, when we was, you know, we were up 15, this was the game that was going to separate us from everybody in the Eastern Conference. We were 14 and so we had the best record, I think the best record in the league at the time. And we had beat almost all the big teams except Detroit. And, you know, at the end of the game, we were beating them. And I just knew that something wasn't right. You know what I mean? Because during the whole game, it was some disrespectful stuff said in the game. So at the end of the game, we're at the free throw line. And I'm shooting the free throw. And I hear somebody in the back saying, "You can get your foul now, Ron." You know, I'm not really paying no attention, you know what I'm saying? But I'm not thinking about, this is B from last year. Like, they was in a hard fought battle for the Eastern Conference Finals last year. And so I didn't really pay no attention. So I'm guarding Ben, I just let him score. And Ron come from out of nowhere and just push him. And Ben had just dealt with a death in his family at the time. Somebody had passed.
He was going to do something already.
Yeah, but not only that, we was busting their ass on national TV for the world to see. They were in their feelings, trust me. Oh, we served them up, bro. We served them a nice, shiny ass whipping with baby all. I'm talking about, bam, take this ass whipping on national TV. You know what I mean? And when Ron fouled Ben, I think Ben's response was, not only was he dealing with a death, but they just came in here and embarrassed the shit out of us. You know what I mean? So when that happened, okay, I'm thinking, bam, okay, let's just break it up. Trying to break it up. But as we breaking it up, you got Lindsey Hunter, you got Rip Hamilton. They still talking shit. So like I say, you already know, it'll take nothing but a second for me. You ain't got to put no battery in my back. Soon as I saw that, if you look at the tape, I walked all around the whole circle and squared up. Took my jersey off, you know, so my punch could come out fluid. I want my jersey tucked, they're going to hinder my punches. So I pulled my jersey out. Square up, nobody run up. You know what I'm saying? So in that moment, I'm in fight mode. You know what I'm saying? And it's a whole bunch of stuff going on. But what really egged everything on, they didn't do a good job of getting Ben off the court.
He kept doing, she threw something like
Kept throwing stuff, kept throwing stuff. And Ron was cool. Well, people don't know, Ron was told that in his session. To find a place, when you get to, like you're about to explode, find a place to calm down. Ron would lay it on the table and it was the craziest shit ever. But he put the headphones on, he found his happy place. You know what I'm saying? So he was cool. It's still a whole lot of pushing going on at that time, though. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, Ben's still throwing stuff. So by that time, when the cup come, I'm just in survival mode. And once I saw my teammate go, I didn't think twice. You know, it felt like I was back in Port Arthur and went in the club when somebody threw a punch at one of my homeboys. It's an all-out brawl now.
I'm in Sacramento at the time, and we're just coming out of halftime. I think we're playing Memphis. And I turn back and look, and I'm like, damn, that's a fight. Damn, they're in the stands. So we call the whole team. Pretty much the whole team comes back in the locker room. And I want to say we're late out to the second half because we're in there watching this all go down. So Ron gets up in there. Ron initially points out the wrong dude, right?
He grabs the wrong dude.
He
running up the stands and grabs the
and
wrong
guy. And then out of nowhere, Ron hits dude. Someone throws something at Ron. And then that's once Ron is tangled up with this dude. And then that's where you come in and clean old dude out.
Yeah, and what people don't know, Matt, when I go in the stands, I go up and initially grab Ron. This is why I hate why I got labeled. You know what I'm saying? I went up there to actually grab. You see me, I turn to grab Ron. But as I grab Ron, another fan throw another beer in his face. Come on, man. Come here. You got to pay for that.
Right.
Let me look at your whole face. And he lucky that they grabbed me because I was finna Lewis Mann him and stump him out and make his teeth touch the curb. I was finna stump him out. You know what I mean? Because I was in fight mode. I was in survival mode. You got to think. At that point, we didn't run into the stands.
Right.
So what people don't know is where the arena was, that's not Detroit. Mm-hmm. That's nowhere close to Detroit.
The Palace and Auburn.
If we would have been in Detroit,
we might have some trouble.
A lot of players would have been knocked out, probably damn near dead in there.
Right.
But where we were, you know, when we got into the stands, it wasn't going crazy. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? We were really clearing people out, you know what I'm saying? But the fact that my teammates had came grab me and pulled me off, you know, that kind of saved me some money too, because I was going to hurt that dude.
Well, that's what people know. I think, you know, not to make light, and I kind of laugh here and there because it's happened so long ago, and we've been able to joke about it since. But on a serious tip, people don't understand, like, as players, you can't just say anything or do anything to us just because we're players. Right. I mean, we hear the crazy. I mean, in Utah together, we heard so many racial slurs, and throughout my career, people have said stuff, and I'm like,
they would expect you to play through it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You're big. No, like, that's, you don't disrespect men like that. You know right. what I mean? And I think there's a there's some kind of understanding that people think, oh, just because we paid a bunch of money for this ticket, we can say and do what we want to you. You know what I mean? So I mean, talk is one thing. You know, you go up and you know, they start throwing stuff and doing stuff like that. That's a whole other thing. So, you know, when I initially saw it, I'm just like, damn, that's going to be some trouble. But I was thinking, like, I understand it. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, in the heat of the moment, you know, someone's throwing, a fan is throwing something at you. Like, that shit should never happen.
There's no amount of money that you can pay me that will allow somebody
to
belittle me when I show everybody respect.
Right.
I'm not accepting it in no shape or form, especially now in any other place, any other setting, throwing a beer in somebody's face is assault.
Yeah,
no, you're going to jail.
Right.
You're going to jail for that. And if you in a bar, somebody throw a beer in your face and you hit them back, you get off because that's self-defense. But me, I get 30 games and suspend, fine them to $3 million.
Well, talk to me about that. How did that, I mean, that split second, you know, being a great teammate, having your man's back, change you career-wise, financially? Take us through that.
Well, having the game of basketball taken from me, I think that's the lowest I've ever been in my life.
30 games, huh?
Just, you know, the fact that I can't play basketball, like, that shit took a lot out of me. And just sitting at home, smoking with the homies, playing football in the snow, trying to find something to do, it was nothing that can give me what basketball gave me. So that was a big turn in my life, you know what I'm saying? Because I wanted to get back so back, it made me appreciate the game like I was in high school, like I was in middle school again. So it was a blessing in disguise. Besides being fined and losing the money and all that, it gave me the love back for the game from being away from it so long.
You feel like it cost you, you know, some stuff though, as far as All-Star games and...
Man, I mean, I think that's probably the only thing I regret, man, because like I was labeled a bad guy off of helping my teammate. Mm-hmm. And I know it's at least 2 or 3 years in my career, I was definitely an All-Star, deserved to make it. Mm-hmm. But I got labeled by referees, I got labeled by coaches. You know, it was even a time when I was in Charlotte. And I got to Charlotte, there was a decent team, but they were at the bottom of the East. As you know, I get us to the playoffs, you know, and around All-Star time, Gerald Wallace made it. But when Gerald Wallace made it, everybody on the team, from the coaches to MJ and them, feel like, well, Jack is the reason why we're here. Mm-hmm. You know, we happy for G-Dub, but Jack is the reason why we're here. Mm-hmm. And to the point where, you know, MJ made a call, you know, like, we know it's more than just basketball now, because look at his numbers. Yeah. Look at where we at now since he's been here. And
even further back, too, in Golden State. In Golden State, you had the year that you should have been an All-Star.
Yeah, but, you know, when I first got there, starting off those 7 games suspended, that hurt me.
From another incident.
That hurt me, you know what I'm saying? But MJ had made that call. And Paul Pierce had got hurt, so it was a spot. They gave it to David Lee. My numbers was 10 times better than his. They weren't even in the playoffs. So at that point, I knew it was because of that. So that type of shit hurt, because you know how hard we work, and you know how many our people already count us out, and we had to prove ourselves every night anyway. So that, all that from the brawl, that shit still hurt to this day.
What was life like off the court? I mean, I know you probably.
I'm a rock star. They love it. People love me for it. Like, all I hear is, man, I wish I had a friend like you. Right. I need a friend like you. You know what I mean? And I appreciate that, because I'd rather be known for somebody's being a good friend than being an asshole or a dick. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm labeled as being a good teammate. And if me going in the stands sets the standard of what a teammate should be, I rock with it.
I was always taught growing up to protect my brother and sister at all costs. Like, they fight, you fight. That's why I grew up fighting my whole entire life.
Wrong.
It was second nature to me. Tell me what it was like for you. What in your past triggered you to react the way you did during the Brawl for Ron?
Well, you know, just growing up in Port Arthur, Texas, you know, everybody know everybody. So just that I got my brother back, I'm my brother's keeper attitude, that's just around the neighborhood with your friends. But when I lost my older brother, I was like, shit, 5 minutes away. And he was jumped by a couple guys, they ended up beating him, hitting him with bottles and pipes and shit. And he ended up getting 18 staples in his head where eventually, as soon as the ambulance got there, he was already brain dead. And just knowing that I was that close and couldn't get there, you know, I know, shit, we both probably would have been dead. I probably would have saved his life. I don't know how it would have played out. But just knowing how small my city is and how much we was together and I couldn't get there, that made that, not only I was already that type of guy, but that made me become more of a brother to you and everybody else. You know what I'm saying? So when that situation with Ron.
Felt like your brother.
I have to.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what I say throughout my career. Like, I treat my teammates like family. I was always taught to protect my family. So anytime, if you look at all my finds throughout my career, people were never fucking with me. It was because I was protecting a Blake or a CP mm-hmm. or taking up for Kobe or taking up for my teammates, because if you fuck with one, you fuck with all of us. And I think that's why we hit it off instantly. You know what I mean? When you were in the bra, I didn't know you, but I'm just like, damn, like everyone else thought, like, that's a real motherfucker right there, like someone that has your back. I mean, that's obviously some shit I would have did. You know, so when you came to Golden State and I seen your lips were a little bit dry, I knew you'd been smoking dope. I was like, okay, so this is the dude that fights and he smokes weed. This is the match made in heaven. Yeah. And I think we kind of hit it off from there on out, because we are very similar in our upbringing, in our thought process, in our wearing our heart on our sleeve, and we'll die for our brother, literally or physically. You know what I mean? So it's just, it's refreshing to see. And unfortunately, before, like you said, you couldn't tell your story. So you've been labeled as this thug or this gangbanger,
like
this
too.
And that. You know what I mean? So that was something I also had to learn, to be like, okay, well, fuck the labels. If they don't know me, I don't give a fuck what they think. But that's easier said than done, and it's a process. You know what I mean? Like you said, you were labeled for being a thug, for having your brother's back. If he could have possibly went up there by himself and really got hurt, you know what I mean?
So a whole different story.
So the fact that you went up there and tried to help, but you get a bad rap for it, I know that stuck with you and burned for a while.
It did. And like, you know, just being the game being taken away from you and people saying this about you, your kids hearing this, you know what I'm saying, your mama hearing this, and you know that ain't you, you know what I mean? And you know you was just being a good brother, a good teammate. It was fucked up for a while, but at the end of the day, like you said, I had the attitude where, shit, I had to call somebody to get some fucks to give, because I don't have none.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I ran out of fucks to give, and I became a better person after that.
15 years later, knowing what you know you would have sacrificed and lost, 30 games, $3 million, possible all-star selections, bad reputation, would you do it again?
Again, right now, for him holding the camera. For him holding the mic, for him holding the camera, if we go somewhere together, I'll do it again. That's just the type of person I am. I didn't do it for recognition or for people to say he a real motherfucker. That's just how I am. That's just how I was taught. So, yeah, I'll do it again. I just regret losing that money.
That's
Let me get it back.